When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello. This week we caught up with Connie Hook, who you may know as former Blue Peter presenter, also the other half of Black Mirror creator Charlie Brooker, and also now an author. He's written a book called Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World.
Yeah, you might want to strap yourself in for this one. This, it goes on a bit, but it's well worth a listen, believe me. A bit of a roller coaster of a conversation. It's very difficult to say exactly what we covered, because I feel like we basically covered everything in the entire universe. Connie is an amazing person to talk to, is an amazing interview, and you just kind of let her go off on one, and we just tried to keep up. So it will become very apparent what I mean within about 5 minutes. So just strap yourself in, get the kettle on, and have a listen.
You're listening First Time Dance.
With me, Richard Innes.
And me, Steve Meyer. Connie.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Lovely to be here. That's not one of your children on that, Steve.
It is.
Really?
That's Steve's eldest boy.
Yeah, did he get paid for voiceover?
No, he signed over lifetime rights to me.
Nice. Good. Get them working while they're young, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the philosophy.
Indeed.
To make them earn it.
The podcast's going to haunt him for the rest of his life.
I was going to say, you are blatantly playing that jingle at his 18th birthday party.
Well, I mean,
how 100%. Old is he now?
He's 3.5.
And how old was he when he did the jingle?
3.
Three, yeah. Jingle's a relatively new addition to
the
podcast.
He's already got half a year's career then in the industry.
Yes, he's going to get him an equity card next.
Yeah.
Start putting him out there.
You'll be taking a cut as his agent.
Of course,
obviously.
20%.
Nice. What is standard? I don't know, 15, 20? I don't know.
About that, okay. I'd say.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Well, it depends. If you're doing some sort of corporate engagement, it's more. Whereas if you're just doing a straight job, it's less. It's like they have different tiers.
Oh, really?
Of money taking.
Okay, yeah. Right. Well, I need to become a professional money taker. I think that's the way forward, isn't
it? I'm a professional money spender. Or my wife is.
Yes, indeed. Before we start, actually, we should point out that Connie is very excited at eating a timeout wafer.
Oh, look, yeah. Look,
yeah, there you go.
Can you hear that? That's a good sound effect.
This is given to me by your show. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah. That is Connie. Yeah, that is the sound of Connie Huck eating a timeout wafer.
Which
you
I
can
didn't
hear in the
know
background.
Our producer
Dan, who also works on the Black Mirror Cracked podcast, has hit Connie up trying to steal a guest before she's even been on for his own
by
podcast.
By plying me. And it is plying. There's like a plate full of timeout.
Yeah, I don't know how many he thinks you're going to eat. He's put out the 9 timeout wafers that he's bought out of his own.
I'm more than happy to eat
money.
Them all. Yeah, don't you guys want a timeout wafer?
No, we've just discussed.
Are you watching your waistlines?
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah. What do you think? I think that ship has sailed in my personal.
Indeed.
Have a timeout.
Well, I will in a minute.
No,
I will.
To the wind.
I feel bad for Dan because Dan was basically like a little boy at Christmas this morning because you know he is a Black Mirror massive fanboy, and so he's been a little bit excited about Connie being in the studio.
Connie, well, let's talk about parenting.
That is kind of the goal here. Yeah.
We're talking to Connie, and it's the fag end of school holidays at the moment.
Oh,
and
yeah, the dregs.
How is it going?
Oh, man. It's lasted 5 years, as it always does. And you say it's, you know, we're at the end. I've still got a week to go before mine go back to school. So that, you know, that's not to be sniffed.
See, we are not in that world yet, of course. Well, Steve and I, our oldest boys are at nursery. So
I look after my kids on my own on a Friday all day. So I've got a little taste of what it must be like having them all the time.
It's full on. That's like been my last 7 years, bar last year. So my youngest went to school last year.
Okay.
Hence, I'm sort of here now. I'm back in the world again.
Is it a big, because you're two boys, 7 and 5, right? Yeah. We were saying. So is it, because I've got this idea in my head somewhere as a father to a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, that when their second one goes to school, it's like some kind of momentum shift.
Hallelujah.
And yeah, the weight comes off and all that. Yeah, is that actually the case, or is that just a pie in the sky?
No, it is the case.
Yes.
But
5 years to go.
But between the hours of 9 and 3,
Okay.
Which is, you know, you can't do that much between the hours of 9 and 3.
Two loads of washing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, if I go to something, I don't know, a meeting in town or something, even like the travel time, you're on the clock the whole time.
I've got 6 hours. Away.
There's a low level anxiety that someone will forget to pick up the kids or, you know, it's, yeah.
How do they get on with each other?
They get on really well, which is really good. It's really handy if your kids get on well because it means less entertaining for you to do.
And less refereeing.
Yeah, less all of that stuff. So, yeah, no, they do get on well. They sort of sometimes might have a little clash over wanting to play with the same thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't last very long.
No, I've noticed that already with our, as I say, 2.5 and a 3-month-old. The 3-month-old is clearly just still a sort of blob lying on the floor at this point.
Yeah.
A very cute, lovely blob, but a blob nonetheless.
I mean, can the blob support its own head yet?
No.
See, that's really young.
I should probably stop describing my infant child as an inanimate object. He is a baby. But
he has feelings.
He has feelings. And he's lovely and cute and everything. But what's been amazing is watching the older one, Ben, actually be really lovely with him. Because I remember talking to you, Steve, before the second one was born, that, you know, you kind of think, oh, hang on a minute, is it going to be jealousy? Is it going to be this? And at this point, 3 months in, he just loves him. He talks about him as my Freddy. Where's my Freddy?
It can go either way.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's not, I feel like I'm in agony on now. The fact that he's not displaying emotions of jealousy at the moment means that it's unlikely that he'll sort of have this big rivalry thing going on.
I hope so. I hope he keeps it. Although the thing is, we haven't got to the stage yet of the thing you were describing, the kind of toys. Joint desire for toys.
Yeah. And also you haven't got to the stage of speech.
Yeah.
Because he can't vocalise yet.
No.
You don't quite know his personality. I mean, you know bits and pieces of his
personality. It's funny how you try and apply that straight away, though, isn't it? I mean, he's only 3 months old, and we've already decided that he's this really wonderfully chilled out kid.
Yeah.
Because he is, you know, he's been really easy. He's been really, very fortunate. First baby wasn't so easy, quite challenging in places.
As regular listeners will know.
But it's weird because you do kind of already, I pointed out to my wife the other day, I was like, he's only 3 months old and we've already sort of decided what he's like, which is a bit mental.
Because you're hoping it will be a self-perpetuating prophecy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone knows that every serial killer was once a baby too. And you're like, oh, don't need, you know. I mean, I do think that it's so, like, we are all, in fact, I know, and you know, we all know as adults that we're just a total product of our childhood and our upbringing. And I don't think it really hits you till you're in your 30s. You know, you start noticing that, oh, that trait that blah, blah does comes from his mum, or that sort of ism, or that thing, or the reason that you respond like with anger to such and such is because of something that's come from your childhood.
Yeah.
And I reckon that all of that shaping and forming happens primarily in primary school years and early secondary years. By the time you're in your 20s, you're done. By the time you're in your 30s, you need years of therapy to undo all the weird things in your head.
I've noticed that when I blow my top at home, I have a flashback to my dad blowing his top.
Yes,
and he didn't do it all the time, but when he did, it went bang.
Yeah.
And I've caught myself after the event. I haven't managed to stop myself from blowing my top yet, but I can see my own father in my behaviour.
Yeah.
And it's like,
And that only comes with parenting, I think. I think you're absolutely right. It only comes with parenting where I'd never really stopped to think, I suppose, how much am I like my dad? You know, we look very alike and whatever. But it's not something you really think about. And it's only once I've had kids that now it's like you said, Steve, I can hear his voice. Sometimes I say, right, that's enough. And I can eat, and I think, my God, that's actually my dad
but
talking.
What's even weirder is you'll find this more and more as your kids get older. You'll start seeing things in them that are you.
Yeah.
So my oldest is really hates doing stuff that he's not good at. He just doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to even try and get good at it. And I was like, oh my God, that was me. And and he's not good at losing either. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, that's me.
Mm. I haven't hit that yet.
Yeah. Oh, he's like, there was a stage where literally we'd take him to birthday parties, and if it's past the parcel, we'd be like, oh no, like fearing for him not. And like, he didn't like it either when people used to sing happy birthday. We'd have to whisk him out of the room. I mean, he's got over that now. Yeah. But, you know, and he was quite he could write and read really young. And we actually think he learned to read off subtitles. He had this obsession about putting subtitles on the telly.
Okay.
And actually,
that's not a bad show,
I know,
actually,
it's really good, it's a good tip. He sort of recognizes.
Depends what he's watching.
Well, yeah, this is true. On CBeebies, obviously. Oh, yeah, of course. But also stuff like his dad's really into gaming. So, you know, whereas all the other parents are like, yeah, my child only has half an hour of screen time. I'm like, yeah, mine only have half an hour of screen time. But like stuff like, I don't know, game over. And, you know, like he could recognise words. Really? Like very early
That's
on.
That's quite cool.
Yeah. Well, is it though?
I don't know. Well, Steve and I have very differing views on screen time.
I've got melting last half of the time out, but I need to get rid of
just keep it. Down, it's down, fine, down, it's fine. Just keep
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we, Rich and I approach screen time in very differently. Very different ways.
The boys in my house, it's very similar, by the sounds of it, to yours.
Yeah.
I started out with kind of a whole set of principles and like, oh yeah, and we'll do this and we'll do this and we'll do this. And then that has just lapsed very, very quickly.
Very quickly, into you realise, like, this is a good babysitting. Yeah.
Well, I've watched Peter Rabbit. I've watched this episode of Peter Rabbit approximately 57 times this week. But yeah, we'll just watch it again.
Well, you know what? People once feared books, didn't they? And then they feared telly. And now they fear YouTube.
That's a good argument.
And
somebody
actually,
who watches screen time.
It is the future.
We all do it. Because Steve is still a Puritan on this and has managed to...
So Jackson doesn't watch anything.
My husband looks at all up extensively, like the research into it, the reports, blah, blah, blah. And he's swears blind that there's no academic evidence or no studies have showed that it's a bad thing.
I'm taking that. I'm taking that. I'm running with it. I trust your husband's
opinion. The 1940s smoking lobby, is he? Is he working for William Morris in like the 1930s?
Yeah, he's sponsored by Google, obviously, and YouTube. Yeah, he is of the mindset that let them be ahead of the curve because that is what is...
They're the next generation of Netflix viewers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Pay your mortgage.
Yeah. Well, look at these YouTubers. I mean, okay, so we took hours to see... Have you heard of Dan TDM?
Yeah.
No, what's Dan? Yeah.
Okay, so Dan TDM is a YouTuber that does gaming.
Worth
so
like okay. 20 million
oh,
quid.
Oh, I see, right.
He is massive. So we took them to Wembley Arena. It was packed with seven-year-olds that were all Dan TDM fans. Dan did 4 dates and his management or whatever wanted him to do way more, but he doesn't need to. He doesn't need
to. Because he's loaded.
Yeah, he's absolutely minted. And it was mad. And these seven-year-olds are just watching, you know, this. They'd sort of made this sort of little plot up and this story to divide the audience into these three gangs, these three tribes that are sort of, there's this loose plot that, you know, you're all against each other and who will win. But really it was just a device to get this whole audience to just watch three kids gaming against each other on a big screen.
But esports,
and they loved it.
Esports is enormous like that. You know, you got particularly in the Far East, you go to sort of, I think in Korea, they have these enormous tournaments where it's like football stadiums that are sold out. You know, 80,000 people there all watching two blokes playing FIFA on a screen. Yeah. You know, it is mental.
It's but mad.
I think that is the future.
Okay, so we've got this virtual reality headset. At home.
Black Mirror fans are now, the ears are pricking
and
up.
And I'm sorry, am I going off on a tangent from parenting? I'm analog, he's digital. Like, I just want a phone that can make a phone call and yeah, I would like to look at the internet now and again, but really I don't need anything more than that. And I put this headset on and it's portable. So you can take it any. Like I could have bought it here today. It just fits in a bag. You don't have to link it up to your telly and or a console or anything like that. It blew my mind. It actually blew my mind. There's loads of different things you can do on it. You can be in a boxing match. You can. I did this thing called Walk the Plank, where I was at the top of a building on a plank, looking down. It was so real that I was just terrified. Like I started getting vertigo. Honestly, it blew my mind. And I'm so usually I'm like, that would be out of date really quickly. What a waste of money. Technology is obsolete in 2 seconds. And I was just blown away. So I think I've been won round by my husband.
I think that's what's going to happen. It's like that film Ready Player One.
Yeah.
Where there's all these people who are living in some kind of post-apocalyptic world who are just sat in their bombed out flats with virtual reality headsets linked up to some kind of vitamin drip that just keeps them.
That is kind of like a sort of Black Mirror concept.
I was about to say, I think Steve's is pitching a script here for the new Black Mirror episode.
But it's true. And then I will hopefully want my son, who doesn't watch any screens at all, except for 7 minutes of Tottenham's football highlights on a Sunday morning with me, to have the skills of interaction with other human beings in a different way, you know, if he bumps into someone in the street, he better talk to them rather than over a headset across an internet connection.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that screens are going to be part of his life. He won't be able to avoid it. But I want him to have some different basis.
No, I wasn't on any social media, not even Facebook or anything, till literally 3 years ago. I had to get on Twitter as part of a job. So I got on Twitter. And so I'm totally of the same. I was really annoyed that I liked the virtual reality. Mm. It was like I was fighting it. I'm so with you. And like, you know, I ring people on the phone for a conversation still, and millennials just think that I'm like, it. So, yeah. That's so retro. You use the phone to talk to people. Yeah. And it's really weird, because surely that's a better sort of medium than sort of using, like, texting someone is just like having a pager. That's really retro.
Yeah,
isn't it?
My wife records her text messages as voice messages.
Oh, and sends it as WhatsApp.
I've seen people doing that in the street. Yeah.
That's freaky.
Yeah. Siri, tell my wife that I will be late home today and to put the dinner in the oven.
But I still go back to your original point there about the idea that the way things just move forward, you know, every decade, every generation, whatever it is, you know, things continue to, progress is inevitable, as it were, whether it be positive or negative. And so I kind of just roll with the tide, I suppose. And I'm happy for my boys to do that as well, in the sense that, well, look, this is progress. This is the way society is moving. You move with it.
Yeah, I think everything, but in the right amount. So as long as they are still sort of interacting.
Yeah, as
with
long as he knows
people,
how to speak to people. That's right. That's quite important.
Yeah, 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 definitely. Because my friend, so she gave her child no screen time. And this is going back now, because he's actually in secondary school now. So this is probably a bit pre-iPad. She wouldn't let him go on the computer. And then he started being really sort of nervous about going to school on a Thursday. And then she couldn't get to the bottom of it. And she found out that he was nervous and worried because they did computing lessons and all the other kids knew way more than him.
Okay. Yeah.
And he felt really backward.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's exactly what you're saying. You need to move with the times.
Yeah, I mean, if Jackson wants to do coding... go for it.
Get on the HTML,
I
son. Yeah.
I actually think they should teach coding in 100%. Primary school. Yeah.
Well, probably someone's going to tell us they do now. Some are going to probably get like an email from someone.
Well,
going,
you know what? So I've been looking it up, like to what extent it is on the curriculum. And it's in, so you can get like little apps and little games that sort of introduce you to it. But I have seen that they do it in some places, but I think it needs to be across the board. If we want to get ahead as a nation, she says, I don't know, the Amazon is burning, there's no government.
Why? We're tilting the edge of the apocalypse. Let's do some coding in schools.
Yeah, let's get ahead.
Yeah, we are kind of skirting around the big issues here, aren't we? Yeah, yeah. How long is my son allowed to sit on the iPad for? Well, you know, the country's burning, but fine.
We should point out that this episode is being recorded in late August.
Yes. Sorry, have I just blown
whatever?
No, it's quite all right. Yeah.
If you're currently listening to this in
broken
your
fourth wall,
bombed out house wearing a virtual reality headset,
there are riots going on in the street outside.
We might be slightly out of date. Oh. Do you, so Jackson doesn't watch screen time, but he, because he goes to the nursery, he comes home singing Go Jetters.
Right.
Song,
because
all the other
great
sing
theme
it.
Tune.
He
by
does
the way.
Not know
best theme tune on TV. It's like the disco funk type thing. Yeah. You know what I mean, it's go all around the world. You know that one.
I'd know it. Yeah.
It's very good. It's like being in the same room as one of the Go Jetters.
I've got a mental block of how it goes.
But he's using that to socialise.
Yeah.
Even though he's not watched it.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Because he wants to fit
in. Don't you think, Dad, you should let him watch one episode now? Or do you think that opens the floodgates?
I think he may have watched one episode.
The thing is, right, so my
they're
first
about 7
one,
minutes long, aren't they?
Something like that. Yeah,
about that. My first one had, like, no sugar till he was about 3.
Yep.
And I was like policing it. And then even then it was like when we went to someone's house and they shoveled jelly down, you know. So yeah. And then by the time you get to number 2, then... You know,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. So although Jackson is not watching Go Jetters, good luck with that, because it won't last long. Because
think,
you just can't help it.
Well, because, and to go back to Steve's point, I think this is going to link us beautifully into Cookie, your
lovely
new book.
Yeah, we should get into that.
We should get into that.
Yeah.
Is that idea of fitting in, because that's something I've often thought about, is that when, by the time sort of Ben gets a bit, he's still young enough now that it doesn't really matter, but when he's sort of 3, 4, 5, that that becomes social currency, doesn't it? It's like you said, he's come back and he's singing about Gojek, even though he doesn't really know what it is. So that it's odd and kind of scares me how young that starts to become an issue. Because I'm already thinking, with Ben being 2.5, is he going to fit in? Is he going to be popular? Is, you know, do other kids like him?
It's happening the minute they are out of the womb. Mm. And so kids are all a blank canvas. They know nothing. Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, you, me, everyone here. Once upon a time, we had no preconceptions of anything. And slowly, as they grow older and older and older, it's the stuff that we paint in that goes in there. So, you know, I was saying about, we should teach them coding in primary schools. I also think it's really important from when they're young that they know that, you know, there's starving kids that live over here and these people are refugees that come across on a boat. Because actually we've got into a sort of cycle of really wrapping kids up in cotton wool. And I'm not saying that let's just traumatise them, but kids are really resilient and actually they're much more sort of open-minded to everything. They're not cynical and jaded like us. And if things strike their core when they're young, so if it's just the norm to, I don't know, it's just the norm that we all want to help each other and that's what brings happiness rather than help ourselves, then they will calibrate differently to us. Whereas, you know what you were saying about fitting in? We've turned into a society where because we just want more and more and more, people want to be more fashionable. They want more money. They want more properties. They want more of everything, more power. Everything that to fit in, we're all doing that and on really tiny levels as well. So whether it's, people turn their nose up at a bar of soap because the norm has become you have a plastic dispenser of soap. And if you don't, we're setting these sort of standards for ourselves that we're all striving to keep up with. And so then you think, oh, well, I should buy my kids this and blah, 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 blah. And they are happy, it's a cliche, to play with a cardboard box.
Yeah.
And they're not aware of all of the stuff on offer. We are, and we're putting that in their heads.
We're not buying him a Superman or a Spider-Man t-shirt or toy or whatever.
You're setting his sort of Marvel mindset stuff by
he's
doing...
He's starting to think there's some value in this plastic figure of Iron Man that is above and beyond the value of, I don't know, an apple.
Yes.
You know.
That's 100%.
You're exactly right what you say, I think, that you need to start with them when they're young and condition them. And so we're doing litter at the moment with Jackson. So, you know, when he has something to eat and there's a wrapper, the wrapper goes in the bin. And the reason the wrapper doesn't go in the it's going to hurt animals, it'll harm the world, and animals might die, Daddy. And it's like, yeah, that's right, Jackson, animals might die if you drop litter on the floor. And just to make it as simple as possible, and then he sees that his sister, who's obviously 1.5 with a ice lolly wrapper, he's like, oh, she must put that in the bin or animals will die.
Yeah. No, but that's the way to do it. Because I now, to this day, hate wasting food because my parents would always make me eat everything on the plate. And it's better to put less on the plate and then take more than just to put loads and then just end up throwing all this food in the bin. Because they came over from Bangladesh where, you know, loads of people can't afford to eat. And so stuff like that has gone in the book. Because like I say, things that strike you to your core when you're young, you take with you for life. So,
and that's but that's both positive and negative, isn't it? Because the thing that's always, rung true in my mind is prejudices, whether it be racism, homophobia, misogyny, whatever it might be, those are things that are put onto a kid at some point.
Yeah.
So in the same way that what Steve's doing with Jackson and with Litter, you know, that's like kind of a positive message and trying to get that positive vibe into him on that particular subject. At some point, someone somewhere, any kid that grows up to be a racist,
you're not born homophobic. Right. Yeah.
So it's just so important that you're putting those right messages into them at that early stage.
Yeah. So I remember being really young and hearing a woman's voice on the radio, and I must have been really, really young at the time, and I thought, but I didn't think women were on the radio, and I didn't like it because I thought, but that sounds wrong. But it only sounds wrong because I hadn't heard it. Now, you'd never think that because, you know, it's a lot better than it used to be. I can't say it's perfect. But the point is, you know, you need to get kids conditioned to all of this stuff. And then anything is possible. Like, anything is possible. People fought the smoking ban, didn't they, before it came into effect. Non-smokers and smokers alike were like, smokers will be second-rate citizens on the street corner. This is awful. The minute you change it at the root, quite quickly. We wouldn't have it any other way. Same with wearing seatbelts, whatever. If, you know, if I came in here now...
Drink driving.
Yeah, things are just, you know, people are often nutters until something's normal and then they're trailblazers. You know, suffragettes and maybe no different to sort of Extinction Rebellion people or whatever. I'm just giving examples.
So are we saying that Brexit's good then?
We don't, but to tell you the truth, we have no idea.
No, we don't.
We don't know what's good and what's bad, but we can only use what we think. But what I would say is that there's lots of people that think, you know, helping yourself is a better outcome. So Brexit is us having, let's reclaim our independence and let's make our own laws. Let's just do our own thing and help ourselves. And people think that brings happiness as opposed to helping each other.
Well, so I heard on the radio this morning, someone talking about the environment, and they said the whole of society is set up along capitalist principles,
which is
to create wealth. It's not, and that's not compatible with saving the planet.
No, it isn't. Mm. Of course it isn't. You know what? Everything is about ease and wealth. So even the example I gave you of the soap dispenser, you know, we didn't need that, did we really? But we've got it. And it's in everything. You know, we used to use chalk on a blackboard, but instead we'll have like a whiteboard now made of plastic or whatever. It's in everything. So in really, really subtle ways. So it's not just the big things like let's drive an electric car or let's, you know, all become vegetarian. It's in every little thing that we do, because
so how do you communicate this to your boys then?
I think, well, I mean, yeah, mine are 5 and 7, but like you were saying, it's all that thing of, I don't know, if they're brought up to sort of know the difference between recycling and, so my husband will sometimes get a carrier bag and put it in the bin, not even in recycling, and it's not because he's not into the environment, he's just not thinking. Because he's had a lifetime of not doing that. We're so conditioned. Because we had a lifetime of smokers smoking in buildings, we fought it and we were too used to it. The minute it's changed at the core, it becomes normality. Mm. So people, I don't know, took in evacuees because it was the norm. It wasn't like this is this choice. We've got war. You can have a kid if you want. It was like you have to. So I'm just giving this as an example. If we all had to have a refugee and it was the norm, then we wouldn't think like, oh, I don't want a stranger in my house, because it'd just be part of normality. It's really hard to do at our end because we're so ingrained, like I said. Mm. But with children, they don't know what the norm is. You look at the climate protesters, the Greta Thunbergs of the world, they are much better at all of this than we are. And also, they haven't got that sort of capitalist sort of I want more thing at the age of 7 or 6.
Well, they've got the innocence of believing that you'll look after each other. And we've got the cynical...
Yes, stronger together.
That actually, we look after ourselves, and that's the only way I can be certain. That's our mentality.
Yeah, and there's a reason people get less left wing as they get older. Generally speaking, I know that's not. I know that's a generalization, but I know so many people who, at the age of 18, 25, you know, rabidly left wing. Like really, I can think of several people in my own family.
Yeah.
And then as you get older, you get into your 30s, you get a mortgage, suddenly you're paying for kids, suddenly you're doing it, you know, and you
start thinking about how much tax you're paying.
Exactly. And then all of
but
a sudden.
But you know what? The tax thing really gets me, because these people at right wings are always like, stop a scrounger. People are claiming benefits that shouldn't be. Why is that any difference from people trying to get their tax down and avoiding tax? Mm. Whereas if kids are just taught, this is the norm. Like, we'll do this and we'll have good hospitals, good schools. We won't need private schools. You know, all schools will be good. Everything will recalibrate. At first, there's always an adjustment, and that's the problem. People don't want to go through the adjustment to get to the great place that we could be in.
Let's say you're Prime Minister, right? Let's make you Prime Minister right now.
Yay. I think it might be better than Boris.
Well, I was going to say, yeah.
Or whoever is the Prime Minister, because this podcast goes out.
Oh, yeah.
If number 10 is still standing. But let's say, all right, so thinking specifically about, you know, how we're influencing our children and how things specifically related to that, what would be, you know, like money no object, what would be the thing you'd want to do?
If money was no object?
Yeah, for just completely hypothetical.
For climate change.
Or for kids.
Well, okay, I would make it compulsory in schools that you would learn, like, so I don't know whether you call it citizenship or whatever, but it's actually part of the curriculum to learn about values of altruism, right? So we used to have a top rate of 95% of tax in the 60s. Yeah, 60s, something like 70s, that. 70s, yeah. Whatever. At the time, it was just the norm. We will never be able to go back to that, because that seems mental. But it's only for people that can afford it. Mm. You know, what more do you need once you've got a roof over your head, once you've got food in your mouth and...
And a virtual reality headset.
Well, this is the important key thing. Friends and family that give you... Because that's what real happiness is. So, like, anything that is sort of a material good that makes you happy, the iPhone 1000, you are happy for all of till the iPhone 2000 comes out, and then you're chasing it, the 3000, the 4000, the 5000. So the happiness is just very bite-sized, but you liked it so much, you want the next bit and the next bit, but you're forever chasing it. Mm. But in doing that, you know, the money is going on these consumer goods for yourself or whatever. Whereas, I don't know, to take your friends out for a meal, I don't know, spending it on charity or other people, people would go, what, you want £50 to give to, I don't know, whatever good
a
cause it is.
For Oxfam, yeah.
Yeah, but they wouldn't think twice about £50 on an Uber or on a new top or another pair of shoes that they don't need. Whereas when you go, that £50 could actually save a life. And when you think a life is like what Jackson has to get, you know, that is a big deal. And every now and then we dip out of it because we'll see a picture of a baby washed up on a beach and we'll be like, oh my gosh, this is awful. And suddenly we're out of it. And then you forget about the baby on the beach and it's trending that, I don't know, the royals are doing this or whatever. And you forget about it. Whereas if the baby on the beach is something that's in your consciousness or in that goes to your core when you're young, your happiness will sort of be derived, I believe. Yeah, you can cover on this. If from when you're young, it's the norm that, you know, that actually we do this and we give to whatever and we redistribute income a bit, and the happiness that you get is from having family and friends and people that you actually care about, then suddenly you won't. I honestly can say I do not get the happiness from buying new clothes. Okay. I haven't bought a new item of clothing since Blue Peter. But why? It's because I'm selfish like everyone else. Yeah. I don't get the happiness from that because I've been conditioned sort of differently just to derive my happiness. But I can totally get it that people do, and people pay loads for therapy, and maybe if the new shoes is your therapy, it's a really complex thing where we derive happiness from, but it's all that we can want.
I'm with you. I when we became parents, my wife and I, we, as soon as you get your head around the idea you can buy secondhand baby stuff or you can have secondhand baby stuff, it changes your finances dramatically because you realise you don't need a brand new
And also everyone's got friends whose kids have grown out of that stuff.
But my point was going to be about when you've got kids and when they're younger, you get inside their heads and it potentially changes their behaviour further on down the line. And this altruism idea and this, you know, giving, you know, you're an ex-Blue Peter presenter. We all will all remember totalizers from Blue Peter about kids giving.
The charity stuff.
Blue Peter was woke before woke.
That was a massive thing, wasn't it? Yeah. Of people remembering, you know, you'd, and there'd be kids that would do sponsored stuff. I don't know if your kids still do it at school. Everyone take their sponsorship form around all the relatives because we're raising money for some charity of starving children in Africa, you know, the late 80s, Michael Burke, you know, Ethiopia, that kind of stuff. We've got a generation of people now who grew up through that, and we're not seeing.
And we're the capitalistic bastards.
We're still capitalists, aren't we?
Yeah, because people don't join up the dots. So, you know, we're saying this thing of like, oh, don't buy loads of clothes or, I don't know, be vegetarian. People have this mentality of, I won't make a difference. Yeah. And it's kind of true to some extent because you won't unless everyone does it. And when I say everyone, it needs to be everyone globally. Yeah. And this is the big problem. But if you don't lead by example, then it will never happen even globally.
No.
But you're absolutely right. People don't join the dots. So, like, I bumped into this, sounds like a really flash, but I saw Prince Harry at some... thing. It was the screening actually of a Hazard, a David Attenborough thing.
Next time you see him, ask him if he fancies coming on the podcast.
But I just mentioned him. He was saying about, I don't know, we were talking about Megan. Oh yeah, Megan was expecting a baby, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know how the conversation got onto it. It was obviously because of the whole like climate change thing, because we were watching this David Attenborough thing. And then I just said to him the thing of clothing, like, oh, I just think it's fast fashion, it's crazy, blah, blah, blah. And he said, but that's a whole different story. Right. And the thing is it isn't. It isn't a whole different
story. Well, what did he mean by that?
Well, I think he probably thought, oh, no, I don't want to get into this now. And also, you know, Meghan is, look, this is the thing, all these people, like, it's really difficult because I don't want to appear too preachy, and I get that people have all got their stuff that makes them feel better, which is why I think we're beyond help. Start with the kids. But, like, you know, so she's a fashion icon or whatever. These magazines make these, you know, all these women's magazines and all these, all the media, us, that's me and you as well, we're all to blame. We fuel this thing of like, that's not on the catwalk this season, so that's on trendy.
Can you imagine if Meghan wore the same dress out?
Yeah, that's time. What I mean. So the, maybe he didn't.
The world would go into meltdown.
Yeah, whereas I do it all the time. Yeah.
Well, I do.
Yeah, and everyone does. Everyone normal does, you know. But the point is, if Meghan did, it would be brilliant because it would say that's okay. And then maybe other celebs would.
Yeah.
You know,
but who's going to be the trailblazer? Yeah, who's going to?
And that's
it?
The thing. And then I was saying this thing of like, so all the books that I've done there. So this one's sort of to do with learning and Cookie's very much into science. We've got a real dearth of kids going into STEM learning. And the problem is if things are painted as worthy or education is painted as, you know, boring, then you're not going to want to do it. And I'm Blue Peter and sort of all of my, everything that I've ever done, I've always had this sort of thought. And it's the same with Netflix binging or whatever. If something is entertaining and it's educational too, it's win-win because it's stealth education.
Yep.
You're being entertained, but then you're learning about Pablo Escobar or whatever it is. So basically, in that book, there's like all this stuff to do with STEM learning. Mm-hmm. There's all this, there's loads of values of like social awareness, and she has the same thing where her mum says to her about finishing the food on the plate, and just little things sewn in. And so if you're sort of, I don't know, doing it through enjoyment, you're getting all this information into kids without them realizing it. Book two is totally about climate change. Book three is about coding and hacking. Hence, I was looking up the national curriculum. But the point is that I was like, then it would be really good if the money from these books, if it ever starts going into profit or whatever, like from, could go back to the cause it's about. But it'd be good for something tangible, like, I don't know, every book sold will, whatever, if it's the environment, plant a tree or what, I don't know what. But the point is, then I was, so I was saying this, and it turns into this conversation about whether if people give money to charity, like celebs or whatever, whether they should keep quiet about it or whether it's showing off or whatever. So this is kind of similar to what you're saying about Meghan wearing the same clothes twice. And I was like, the more that people shout about giving money to charity, who cares if someone thinks they're showing off or whatever, if it changes the fact that it becomes the norm. So instead of having a Sunday Times rich list, you have a Sunday Times giving back list. These people don't need those millions, but they want adulation because their egos maybe, and they want to be higher up the rich list. Imagine if they got the adulation for like, when I die, I'm leaving 95%.
We're just fascinated by it as, you know, a society. I don't know whether
we're fascinated by things that we want, right?
Okay, well,
so we're fascinated by power. We're fascinated by being more fashionable, by being more good looking, by being richer, by being, you know, that's because that's what we want.
That's all true, T. But what I want to pull this back to, I've been sitting here listening, and it's very, very interesting. Yeah. But what we're talking about in terms of wanting our kids to be altruistic, we want them to have social awareness, we want them to be aware of, you know, good education versus bad education, all those things.
Yeah.
What I'm sitting here thinking is, I don't know anybody who doesn't try and put those values into their children, right? So when you're talking about kids at the age that Ben's boy Jackson is or my boy Ben is, everybody's trying to do that. We all teach them. We teach them to share nicely. We teach them to be aware of other people, aware of other people's emotions, all those things. So what I'm curious about is, where do you think we lose it? Where does it go? Where does it tip away?
Like, it needs to be a compulsory thing so that gradually, and it won't happen quickly, but we're almost like, so you know, I said this thing about not buying new clothes. So a lot of my friends have got quite, and you know, that whole make do and like mend and make do thing, it's all taken off. But I noticed, I met up with a couple of friends the other day, and then one of them said to the other, oh, I love your top or whatever. And then she was like, this is like 10 years old or whatever. I'm doing that thing you said, Connie, or whatever. Like, this is, and then suddenly we were all trying to outdo each other on how shabby or how old. You know, if we change what we think is cool. So in Sweden, they have this thing, Lagom, and it took off in a massive way as being a sort of trendy thing. In a sort of weird way, feminism has sort of become trendier, which can only be a good thing to perpetuate change, but change is incremental, it's slow. But if Lagom took off here, and Lagom is just the right amount, we don't need a million items of clothing, we don't need, you know, anything other than just the right amount. When I, so when I was moving, in the between moving house, me and my husband were living in like literally a shoebox with our firstborn, and all of my stuff was in my mum's house. And I suddenly quickly forgot, what is all that stuff? Because I can't even remember what it is. And like, it took ages for us actually to get moved because we had all these property issues, which is a whole other story. But the thing is, you learn quite quickly that you don't need much, right?
Yeah, it's true.
And this whole thing of Lagom was, people were sort of, it was cooler. So like, if I'd come onto your podcast now and I'd say to you, hey guys, like my top is made out of gold, it's gold thread or whatever, you'd just think, oh, that's really tacky and gross or showy, or you know how you might judge someone, because you know, maybe there's somebody and they don't, everything is to do with tastes and what's on our social level anyway. So if you went to someone's house and they had gold lions outside the door, maybe it's their taste, it's not your taste, you might think it's showy. What we need to do is make taste like, oh, you know, if someone's like got, what, she's got another handbag. That's just, do you see what I mean? And it can only be done at the stem. But it's also incremental, like
but
I was
how,
saying. About
how can you do Lagom with a toddler? I mean, I'm looking at the amount of stuff that my boy has.
No, but they grow up. So it's sort of like I said about the, yeah, you can do all this little stuff now. And like I'm saying, they can do it in the schools. And then slowly all these people. So like, if you think that you're right, we're all taught this stuff, but the Trumps and the Farages or whoever it is that you think hasn't got the right, I'm just giving examples. It might be someone else that you think hasn't quite got... A serial killer is a better example. Forget them.
Well, I don't Something know. Trump and Farage, I'd still
when
lumpy.
You look at the into the childhood of a serial killer, mm-hmm. studies show there's always something weird that's happened or something in their upbringing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Similarly, on the flip side, while I was on Blue Peter, the amount of people I met where I was like, so how did you get to do such and such or whatever? And like, for instance, this guy that had he designed the QM2, which is the biggest passenger cruise ship in existence today. It's got five swimming pools, this, that, and the other. He said, when I was really young, I saw the sinking of the QM1 and it really affected me. And I thought, I really want to design the next, you know, ship to outdo this one. But it's unlike, I can tell you loads of other stories, something that got to someone when they were young, it just strikes.
I think that's right. And I think that's quite rare still, that some, that people's later life is dictated to by something that happens. It goes back to what I was saying earlier. There is a period where you lose whatever
you
your childhood.
What? I think you're right, and which is around your 20s.
Because I speak to kids now and you say, what do you want to be? I want to be a policeman, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a spaceman, da da da. They won't. They'll be working in a call centre, potentially.
Yeah.
Or they'll raise money for, you know, a really good charitable course at school. But when they're older, they won't.
But that's
there's
my point
some
about
point
the
in the middle where
that's
they,
kind of what
yes,
I'm saying about
I know,
where
you
lose. You
know
lose,
what? I think the discount, because in my 20s, I was so into like fashion and this, and I was just like, you know, wanted to be like all of that sort of superficial stuff, which was totally sort of the end. I'd sort of been quite square growing up and not into any of that. Mm. And then you go through this rebellion, but then you sort of rebellion or whatever you want to call it phase. But then I've reverted back to that sort of before thing after having gone through that period of being like really like, oh, this is trendy and this label and whatever. So I do think you're right.
I think I think the answer, this is just my opinion, I think the answer is we need to look at ourselves a lot more, because I think if you say to ask parents, are you trying to put these good values into your children? They're going to say, yes, of course they are. Everyone's going
to
say
but
that.
But I think but we need are, to look to are, government but, more
but
as
are,
well.
But are we doing it? Are we actually doing what we say we're doing? When we look at ourselves and think, well, okay, how much am I actually practicing what
I'm
preaching?
But it's
a
big thing for you to do as a parent.
Of course,
it's a societal thing that needs to
happen. Of course,
but
that's how change happens, isn't it?
Because most people are nice, even whether they want to avoid taxes or whatever. I mean, on some level, even, you know, like, you know, I've met, say, Boris Johnson or whatever before. He seems like a nice person, but deep-seated, there's something in his mentality. So, you know, your parents can teach you please and thank you and blah, 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 blah. Mm. If you grow up in a society where it's the norm to do something, you only want to do it to fit in. So, you know, if everyone has an amazing house that looks like it's from a show home, then you'll want that because you'll feel embarrassed if you've been to their house and it's amazing after show home, then you invite them to your hovel. You know, you'll feel embarrassed because it's what you said of fitting in. Mm. So we can't, it needs to be a whole shift of many different things.
I suppose this goes back to that thing that the stage, I guess there's a difference at play here in terms of your boys are a little bit older than our kids and we're still at that stage. I know Jackson in particular is a little bit older and he's starting to get more awareness of the outside world. We're still in that world, I think, to an extent where we are their world. Do you know what I mean? Like they haven't really been exposed properly to society and understanding of all that, whereas your boys now, they're in school.
Starting to question.
Starting to get there.
He's started to question.
It's interesting, I think, the way the perspectives that we take is a slightly different because to me and Steve, the way we behave is still the biggest impact by a long distance on how our kids see the world. Yeah. Whereas your kids are at that age now influences. Where
Jackson's starting to ask if he sees somebody by the station sat on the floor with a notice saying, you know, I'm hungry, I'm homeless or whatever, he'll ask what that person's doing.
Yeah.
The other day he saw some people vaping.
Yeah.
And he was asking what's that thing that person's got in their mouth and then the whys and that kind of stuff. And that's when the door starts to open.
Yeah, yeah. Is that tipping
and you can
point,
get in
yeah.
and start to, you know, help them, you know, build, you know, you can't create the child you want to, but you can, what you give them back then at that pace is what they'll carry forward. So I will start to try and explain to them about homelessness or about litter or about smoking. Another dad might go, don't, you know, that person's lazy.
Yeah.
That
exactly.
person's lazy. You know,
but the other dad isn't a horrible person. It's in his upbringing and his mentality that he just thinks, I mean, what I mean is, I mean, he might be a horrible person, don't get me wrong.
So,
but what I'm just saying is we're not, the majority of us by design, like we have some form of empathy, but it's like nurturing that, the more you can get of it when you're young, the better. And actually studies have shown that reading is a really amazing medium for empathy. And like, you know, so there was so just in like prison, sorry, this is going off on a tangent. But you know, if prisoners read.
How many tangents have we swerved off on it? This is amazing.
Okay, no, I'm not going to go off on another tangent. But the point is the more empathy someone has, if they become the president of the USA or the head of a FTSE 100 company or whatever, they might want to be that person that doesn't just increase a fat cat salary, that wants to give to the workers or that wants to even do a charitable thing through the company, not just because it's ticking a box, but because they want to. And there are people like that. There are,
I hope
but
so.
It's just that their upbringing has maybe been better than the other ones who just want it all for me. But the big thing is you don't take it with you when you die, right? So even fine, you know, like I said, we're all beyond help. I don't want to be too preachy to adults because I think they're just too far gone. And I don't really want to be preachy anyway. It's just we're on a cusp of Armageddon. But the point is that when you die, you don't take it with you. And so we're all like, while we're alive, like scrabbling around being, you know, helping ourselves or whatever. And if it can just redistribute when you go, if that was compulsory or something, I don't know, but it's just sort of seems like there's some mental disconnect that there's people are dying and the Amazon's dying and all this stuff. But the main problem is that we think I can't do anything on my own.
Yes.
That is the crux of everything, and it needs to be everything.
It starts with politics and it extends into every other part of social living, really.
And it's killing it at the root.
I think it's a clash, isn't there, between we want big change, but is big change going to happen with one big decision, or is big change going to happen because lots of people make lots of little changes, which results in a big, you know, one big change?
Yeah.
No one knows the right answer,
it'll
but it's certainly
be a combination.
Yeah, certainly not a bad thing as a parent. To try and help your kids understand the world by talking through the things that we've spoken about.
Do you think that you've become more of an advocate for change by becoming a parent? Because I know I have done.
Yes, and also from my own parenting. I mean, being brought up by my parents. So, my parents grew up in a village in Bangladesh. Yeah. So weirdly, I probably can empathise more with, I don't know, being a refugee or what, you know, all of that stuff. Whereas if it's something so alien to you that it's like a sort of brown face far away or whatever, it's almost like, you know, it's. I know this is going to sound like a mental, this is going to sound really mental, but just say if you kill a fly or whatever, you know, it's just like, well, they don't have any feelings, that fly, so it doesn't matter, so who cares? But then to the fly, it's all of their world. Do you see what I mean? But then they might not have a nervous system or whatever.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the more something is alien to you, the less you you know, and I know it's sounding like I'm saying like people liken people far away to flies or whatever. And it's not something other than the fact that it's not in their face.
I get what you're saying. You know, the fact you don't understand some other, you know, way of life, or in that case, life experience, is not an excuse for dismissing it.
It's the basic rules of empathy, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the fly analogy or whatever. We talk about with Jackson about, you know, don't kill animals. You know, snails. Don't tread on snails, Jackson. And we, you know, in the back of my mind, I've got serial killer. You know, he starts off with snails, and before you know it, he's pulling feathers out of birds. And,
That's how it starts.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully he'll be in a position to travel and see some. Well, we're fortunate we live in London, which is
cosmopolitan,
metropolitan. You know, multicultural. Mm. He'll go to, you know, we live in Southeast London. He's going to go to a school. You know, there'll be classrooms with lots of different people, different cultures, and you know, languages and that kind of stuff. So he'll that become a normality to him in a way that perhaps in a kind of an Oxfordshire village, perhaps he might not have that experience.
Yeah.
So I've thought of that of my own upbringing. I'm very, very keen for that to be replicated for Ben and Freddie. Where, I mean, we're from the same part of the world, Connie, right? We're the same part of West London. And the school I went to was so culturally diverse and ethnically diverse. And I remember specifically, it wasn't until I went to university that I really encountered racism. I remember somebody, I can specifically remember the incident.
Yeah.
Like being at university and somebody saying something and me spinning around, like recoiling. What the hell are you talking about? Yeah. What? And it was because I was growing up, I grew up in a school environment which was that diverse.
And that's
what you want for your kids.
That's why, so in kids' books, you know, there's a real drive to just put characters from all sorts of backgrounds and ethnicities. And, you know, the more you have, I don't know, gay parents in a story, the more it's just the norm rather than.
So you wouldn't ever worry about tokenism in that sense, in the sense that it's a positive. The more tokenism there is, the better, frankly.
Remember I said you have to go through a change which can often be worse to get to the better situation. So tokenism.
Brexit.
Stop. Could be.
No more of a B word.
Tokenism is something we have to go through in a way to get to it being a norm. So
I could see that.
The first British Bangladeshi presenter on Blue Peter, or, you know, there's a big deal made of the fact that I was Asian doing the job that I did. And at the time I didn't like it because I used to think, but I'm normal too. You know, this marks me out as different.
That's not the only way I identified. And,
the O.J. Simpson doc, and O.J. was trying to be sort of like a white jock and everything. And it was sort of a similar thing. He just wanted to be the same. But also, you're sort of being racist against your own in doing that. But the point is, you have to do that. You have to have what's deemed as tokenism in order to get. So I had to hear the female voice on the radio for that to be like, okay, that's not something that isn't done. Okay, then you hear a few more, and then suddenly it's just like voices on radios can be male or female.
Yeah, and we talk about this in terms of parenting. You know, dad's getting involved in parenting, and hopefully my kids will see me as a much more hands-on dad and available, and, you know, working a short week and taking shared parental leave and being around for like 3 months while mum went back to work and that kind of stuff. And they'll pick that up and then they'll take it forward to the next generation. And that's... Then when Jackson is a father, if he becomes a dad, his generation won't even question whether dads take time off
it could
work
be a mum that does this or a dad that does it. In a similar way, you know, I remember when in school, a friend of mine's parents were divorcing, and it was just so like, they're getting divorced. Is this it? And now parents divorce left, right and centre. It's accepted. Families are made up of all sorts of sort of half sisters and stepbrothers, and it just doesn't matter. You know, and similarly, so the book is about a girl, and studies have showed that sort of boys will read books about boys, girls will read books about boys and girls, but boys very rarely read books about girls. So I've tried to, you know, so J.K. Rowling was J.K. Rowling because to put Joanne Rowling could have alienated, you know, and things are changing now. But I really thought I want to make a strong female character, but actually it doesn't really, it's neither here nor there whether she's male or female. And, you know, fingers crossed, so far I've had good feedback from boys, but just little things like that, subtle things.
We had a guy on the podcast ages ago now who wrote that, you remember the book Mini Rabbit? whose name escapes me, I'm afraid. Sorry, that's terribly rude. But he was brilliant, and he was talking about this character, which is just a little rabbit, and it's for really young kids, this book. Yeah. And it wasn't until And it was only after I'd read the book and he mentioned it and we had him on the podcast that I realised this creature was completely gender neutral. Not in the sense that he'd made a point of the creature, but the rabbit being gender neutral. Yeah. It was not, at no point was it referenced whether it was a he or a she.
Yeah.
And that really hit home with me, a bit like you were saying, things that you were like, oh yeah, of course, because it doesn't matter.
You know, so what I've done comedic comic strips throughout the book, but she has a cat and the cat is black, but the cat just looks white. She's from a British Bangladeshi background, but that's irrelevant. Mm. That's just what she happens to be. And so all the characters, you can't really tell what their ethnicity is. You know, her best friend's black, but it doesn't. And it's quite important that you don't see colour in those pictures. Mm. And similar for the black cat. That's why it doesn't matter because, you know, as I sort of think, all people, the important things are happiness and sadness, you know, and actually the feelings you feel, we're all the same, really. All the things like, colour is no different from having different eye colour or whatever. And ethnicity, it's the set dressing. Yeah, you might live in a village in Bangladesh or you might live in a city, but if your best friend ditches you, it hurts just as much whether you're there or here.
Yeah.
Similarly, you might be in a 5-star resort on holiday or in a mansion and you're laughing with your family, or you might be in a caravan, you know, in a caravan park laughing with your family. And the laughter is the same. Happiness and sadness is irrelevant of any of the set dressing. It's only done through sort of friendships, family, acceptance among people you love and that love you back.
But we're conditioned, aren't we, to think that the people with the money and the big house are going to be having a somehow better life than the people.
That goes back to what we were talking about
They have that short burst of happiness when they get the next iPhone, but then they're just chasing it, and there's always going to be someone with more. You know, there'll always be someone with more likes on your Twitter or more friends or more, you know, whatever, to superficially. But it's quality, not quantity, really.
I think that's it. And I think, I'm aware. My God, we've been talking for 55 minutes. Oh, right, we better shut up.
There's so much more to say. I need to tell you about the book. I haven't mentioned the book enough. It's a brilliant book.
We will get plenty of references about the book into the introduction, I promise, because it does look amazing.
Bridget Jones meets Wimpy Kid, but we've gone off on this tangent, which makes it sound like everything is really worthy. But my whole point was education
Connie's
through entertainment.
Connie's worldview in a child book.
Yeah, so basically, that's the whole point. It's all really entertaining and funny, and all the woke stuff is really stealth. I've not done it a good time.
Well, I think there's plenty in there that we've talked
Bridget
about.
Bridget Jones meets Wimpy Kid does not sound to you like, you know, Naomi Klein, does it? Like, so that's what I'm saying to you.
It's not a political manifesto that you've written. I do think the idea that essentially what you've said, we've gone round the houses via many, many tangents.
Mm.
But I think basically, fundamentally, the message you've given us there at the end about the importance of happiness and sadness, and essentially
it's all
those
that
being
matters.
The key things.
All you
and
can
actually,
want is happiness in
context,
life.
Context is irrelevant. Happiness and sadness is what it all comes down to. And I like to think, I don't know if I'm doing it properly all the time, but that's what I'm trying to teach my boys about. And I know, Steve, that's what you're like with your
it's
kids.
It's not about stuff, is it?
And it's not about stuff. It's about happiness and sadness. And I think the more you can keep that up, and you know, you don't lose that in terms of the messaging that you're giving to your children as they get older and they get more exposed to external factors and to the world.
Yeah.
You just keep
the happy
reiterating
person
that message.
With a simple life is winning over the unhappy millionaire.
There you go. Yeah.
But then most people would still choose to be the millionaire, even knowing that, because you still feel that, nah, that can't be right.
No, it's the miserable lottery winner.
Yeah. You just think, well, you can buy, you'll be able to buy that happiness with the money if you've got those millions, surely you will. But that sort of happiness is transient. It doesn't actually get to the heart. It's sort of like, it's like a rush.
What we need is more rich people talking about how unhappy they are. That's basically it, isn't it? Let's get lots of wealthy people.
They are
in the room.
Out there. I'm sure
you've worked with many of them. Well, that's amazing. My God, we have covered a... I don't think when we sat down an hour ago, I envisaged us covering some of the areas we've covered there when we talked.
Putting the world to rights.
Yes. I think if parenting tips and parenting experience.
If you want more of this, read the book.
Yeah. So the book is called Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World, written and illustrated by Connie Huck. Because you illustrated it as well, which is really cool.
And it's sort of like a Wimpy Kid style, funny, laugh out loud romp.
It is good. I've had a look.
Yeah.
The illustrations are hilarious. They're like proper doodles.
And then weirdly, it's all things that adults will relate to too. So it's a good one to read to your kids. Because I'd say it's like a 7 to 12-year-old reading bracket.
This is going to go on the shelf at home. And in about 3 or 4 years, when Ben's old enough, I will read this.
He'll love it. I promise you. I promise you. Or I'll give you your money back.
Well, I haven't paid for the book, so that's a hell of a promise.
Or you'll give me my money back. Or you'll give me my book back. And I'll resell it to someone else.
And Connie, when you are... Parenting. Like J.K. Rowling.
Oh, yeah.
Because of these books. Yeah. Remember the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, what is that? Which podcast?
Yeah. It's very good. It's very good. Mega Man's right. Connie, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
If you've liked what you've listened to, please leave us a review on iTunes and
subscribe.
Subscribe.
And drop us an email at firsttimedads@reachplc.com. If you haven't liked what you've heard,
then go
write it on the reviews. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.